Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Facebook turned 10 this year. As one writer noted, that seems old for the internet, but 10-year-olds still need supervision, especially when they're playing with other children. 73% of American kids between the ages of 12 and 17 have a Facebook account, according to the Pew Research Center. That's three-quarters of all American kids. And over 5 million Facebook users around the world are under the age of 10. There are plenty of arguments about the benefits of young people connecting via social media platforms, but consider what happened to Annie Leonard's 14-year-old daughter. Without her knowledge, Annie writes in a recent article in The Guardian, my daughter's image has shown up next to ads for clothing stores that represent something she opposes, the global supply chain that exploits workers. So is it time to push back on advertising to kids online? One of today's guests, Rafi Kavukian, writes about children and social media in his book, Light Web, Dark Web. He says, our concern is with young social media users. The estimated 200 million under 17 users of Facebook and similar sites. He goes on to write, from the start, these free services lacked transparency. We found out after the fact that we were being data mined, our personal information and online history made available to advertisers to strategically target us with customized ads. We submitted to lengthy terms of use agreements that most people don't read. Let's face it, we've been had, seduced by the world at our fingertips. Now we know better. That dance was not free, and the costs have been considerable. So what do we need to do to protect young people from exploitation online? That'll be the topic of our conversation on Your Call. I'm joined by Rafi Kavukian, who's a musician and advocate for children, perhaps most famously known for his 1980 song Baby Beluga. Rafi is a tech enthusiast, entrepreneur, and ecology advocate, and he's also the author of Light Web, Dark Web, Three Reasons to Reform Social Media Before It Reforms Us. Hi, Rafi.
Hello.
Are you going to sing to us?
I might, Holly. But I think we have other
business. We do. We have other priorities. James Steyer also joins us. He's the founder and CEO of Common Sense Media. He's also the founder and chairman of the Center for the Next Generation, as well as the author of Talking Back to Facebook and The Other Parent, The Inside Story of Media's Effect on Our Children. He teaches at Stanford University and is the father of four. Hi, James.
Hi. Jim, you can call me Jim.
Oh, thank you. I will call you Jim.
And I'll sing instead of Rafi again.
Appreciate it.
My good
we'll get
friend,
everybody.
Rafi.
And we're also joined by Asha Richardson, who co-founded Youth Radio's Innovation Lab, where young people develop web and mobile news apps. And she's a recent graduate of Mills College, and she has a passion for marketing and technology. Welcome, Asha, and congratulations on your graduation.
Thank you, and hello, everybody.
Hello. All right, well,
hello, Asha.
Let's start by talking about social media. This is a really different era for children and teens than even just a decade or a few years ago. What do each of you kind of quickly think is different now than it was when I was growing up and advertisers were targeting me during TV commercials? Go ahead and get us started, Rafi.
Well, I think what's different is that through the proliferation of social media, advertisers can now target people individually. This is, for them, a godsend, and for us, consumers, if you will, not so good, especially if you're a child 12 and under who happens to be on, let's say, something like Facebook. There are laws in some countries in Scandinavia and also in the province of Quebec that say advertisers must not target children 12 or under with direct advertising, direct marketing. Well, all of that goes by the wayside if an underage child has a social media account, because that child will get advertised to directly. And the problem is that kids that young can't really properly assess the pitch that's coming to them. They don't have enough life experience. So clearly that's a case of exploitation. And I just want to say that Joel Bakken, who wrote and directed the film The Corporation, he had a 2011 book called Childhood Under Siege, in which he details the exploitative, predatory commerce that targets children not for respect but for exploitation. With social media, you have all of this exacerbated, and it's a problem that needs attention.
And how about you, James? What do you think is really different? Jim, sorry.
No problem. I'd say fundamentally two things. First of all, kids self-reveal before they self-reflect. So that means that some adults do that as well, but kids in particular do it. And as the father of three teenagers, I can assure you that they do it. So I think that in a world where kids self-reveal before they self-reflect, they can do things that can be very damaging to themselves and to others. And phenomena like cyberbullying or deep concerns over body image and self-esteem, et cetera, all which play out online, particularly on sites like Facebook or Instagram or other social media sites that encourage kids to share constantly and everything. I think that's a very big challenge, and I think it's changing the nature of childhood and adolescence. I think the second fact is what Rafi said, which is you now have a massive big data machine which tracks all of our data and personal information mercilessly and collects it in ways that I don't think our listeners have any sense of the breadth and depth of what's being collected. And that's particularly scary when it comes to kids and teens because, again, they don't even understand a lot of what that data can be used for, and they frequently reveal stuff or are targeted without their knowledge. So I think those are the two basic frameworks that have changed the nature of childhood in the social media era.
And I'd love to hear from Asha, because you've really kind of grown up as this is evolving. And what do you think of what Jim said, that this is really changing the nature of childhood and adolescence?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was 13. 9 years ago, I was 13, and I had a MySpace at 13. And even then, things are different. I think online and social media was a lot more anonymous, and nothing is anonymous anymore. Everything is public. Everything that you're posting is public. And I think that advertisers definitely targeted children through TV shows and Power Rangers, and then they would build a following around that other idea or assuming what it is that they might like, versus now they can just go and actually see all of your public information and they know what you liked because you told them. So my biggest concern or thing that was, you know, a double-edged sword is that when people, you know who someone is on the internet, you're not anonymous, you can kind of hold them accountable if they do things like cyberbullying, like you mentioned earlier. But when you are public and you're not anonymous, advertisers and marketing people and, you know, colleges, everybody has access to your information. One of the biggest things that we discuss at Youth Radio in the Innovation Lab where we're building apps, but also in the newsroom where we're telling our stories, has to do with this digital afterlife and what happens after you post something. You know, how easy is it to delete a picture after you post on the internet, you know what I mean, of yourself? You can't, really. So I think having more of those conversations really, you know, and I guess we'll talk more about this later, needs to happen because we can only combat the marketing people so much, but the whole digital literacy and, like, knowing what it is that you're putting out there because the internet is public is crucial because...
Well, and I wonder, since you are there, Asha, at Youth Radio, where you come into contact with all kinds of young people, teenagers especially, do you feel like you're hearing young people have those conversations, or is it something that really we don't discuss that much, we're not that conscious of?
I think that young people are now hearing the lesson that they need to be more aware. I think that there was a period of time where this, like, shift happened between being anonymous and being public, where people are just posting, and a lot of young people just post stuff. And then sometimes it takes an older young person, so just myself, because I'm an older young person.
Mature
young person. Or like a peer or an adult or a family person, or, you know, even an organization like Youth Radio where we do professional development. The first thing that they ever think about is, oh, man, are college recruiters going to be able to see this? Because I mainly work with high school age students. They're mainly thinking about the direct
implications.
The direct consequences. they're not thinking about as much of the marketing tactics that are being used. Like my friends, I would say my college age friends, notice it a lot more. But again, it has to do with if you're under 10, if you're 13, are you going to notice that you click that you like something and now every website you're going to be fed that same thing? I don't think that conversation, I don't think the advertising part of it. I think more people are afraid of, like, will I get in trouble at school?
But not so much how they're being data mined, as Rafi mentioned. Jim, you know, I mentioned Annie Leonard's example with her 14-year-old, where the personal content of kids is lifted and used for advertising. Can you tell us what the actual laws in the fine print on social media sites like Facebook say about the use of private information?
Yeah, they primarily are lengthy, ever-changing policies. I mean, the one thing you can be sure about some of the privacy policies at Facebook, Instagram, and elsewhere is that they're sort of like the weather. They always change. And you can assume that. And they're very lengthy. And what they basically say is once you sign up for this, it is a simplistic way of framing to you, but it's basic, is we get to use your likenesses and your information in ways that we want. And they certainly use it not just for targeted advertising, but to also make money against it. So kids are not aware of that. You know, Common Sense Media is the biggest kids' advocacy group in the country, and we do this stuff routinely. We also have 70,000-plus member schools around the United States, so we do digital literacy, which Asha referred to, is that in more than two-thirds of the schools in the United States. And I think the message we send to young people is, one, you need to really understand your rights to your own personal information and privacy, which is a big concept for a 13- or 14-year-old sometimes. But I think what the kids really do not realize, because there's a relentless barrage of messages like the like button, et cetera, urging them to share, share. So there's this trend towards oversharing. And fundamentally, the solution with kids is education. That can be done via parents. That can be done via schools. That can be done via programs like this. But to change behavior and to educate kids is sort of a central aspect of this. The second thing, though, you said legally is, Common Sense last year worked with Senator Daryl Steinberg, who's the head of the California Senate, and passed the first major piece of consumer privacy legislation in more than 15 years, which is called the Eraser Button Bill, which means as of the beginning of next year in California, anyone under the age of 18 will be able to remove any post, any information that they've put on a digital platform. That's a major step forward, but it's only one of many steps that could be taken from a legislative and regulatory standpoint to give consumers the right to their own information.
Was it difficult to get that passed?
Sure. Opposition from, you can guess which, I'm sure you and our listeners can guess which companies opposed it. But truthfully, 90% of the public, if you make this clear to them, understands that. So I think we're in the middle of this fascinating discussion on this issue that's, by the way, been completely moved forward, ironically, by the NSA revelations. Because the public, that's when my kids started understanding that they were being tracked, because they could see what was happening. So I think you have this fascinating discussion now that is primarily in the consumer space, but we're in the middle of looking at laws. California is much easier as a more successful legislative process than the disaster of Washington, D.C. right now. So I think you're going to see more state laws that go after privacy issues than you're going to see coming out of Congress. It's a great time.
One of the difficulties, though, about it, both as a parent myself and looking at legislation, is that the technology seems to evolve so much faster than our political system allows for kind of the flexibility. Yeah, go ahead.
Correct. I don't want to monopolize. I would say absolutely correct. That said, in a large organization like Common Sense, we actually understand that, and you can write certain kinds of laws to cover new forms of technology. But you're absolutely right. And that's actually why we don't have laws and regulations right now other than COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, which was rewritten in 2012, that are up to date. The reason is the legislators don't get it. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, they're too old, just like Rafi and I are.
Asha, but, you're the savior.
Asha's the only one with a shot here, but she correctly said that she's older than the kids who are like 9 and 10 now, who are really in the crosshairs. But the truth is, this discussion we're having is going to play out over the next 5 years. And the voices of kids and parents and educators and average citizens are going to start to be heard. The question is, can you roll back the system that the industry wrote?
Can you roll back the system? We're talking about advertising to kids online. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. And let me invite some of the people who are listening right now, those parents and young people who are grappling with this, to join our conversation. We're at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. If you're a young person listening and you've had experience with excessive advertising or use of your personal information online, let us know your thoughts on this, how it affected you, and what you would do about it. And if you're a parent or an educator or somebody who works with kids, how are you seeing the influence of online advertising and marketing affecting your children? 866-798-8255 is the number to call. Again, it's toll-free, 866-798-8255. Talk. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org, and you can post comments at yourcallradio.org, which is where there's information about all of our guests. Jim Steyer is the founder and CEO of Common Sense Media, and he's the author of Talking Back to Facebook. Asha Richardson is co-founder of Youth Radio's Innovation Lab, where young people develop web and mobile news apps. And Rafi Kavukian is a musician and advocate for children's well-being. He is the author of Light Web, Dark Web, Three Reasons to Reform Social Media Before It Reforms Us. And Rafi, I had read something that you wrote. Let's face it, we've been had, seduced by the world at our fingertips. Now we know better that the dance was not free, that the costs have been considerable. And, you know, essentially we've said that the trade-off is we will accept the ads because we get these free services analogous to TV. What do you think are some of these costs?
Well, I think privacy loss is a big one, and the fact that kids online are not safe. You can find out very quickly where someone lives, where their bedroom, their house is, if you're a skilled person doing this kind of black hatter work. The point I make in Light Web, Dark Web is that unless we can make the online experience a safe one for kids, what is the societal cost? We have to really think about this. You wouldn't allow a child underage to drive on a highway that has no speed limits and has no seat belts in the vehicles and so on. Well, the information superhighway, which is the internet, which I love, by the way, I'm a tech enthusiast, but my point is that why would you allow kids on that superhighway, the information highway, who are not prepared for that experience if they don't have digital literacy, they don't understand what digital citizenship is about, and if the privacy settings are not the default settings of the devices that they're using. So there are a number of things that we can do to turn this around. I myself would like to see federal agencies such as the FCC in the U.S. and the CRTC in Canada weigh in, because they're supposed to be regulating media, and aren't social media media? So that's one thing, and I think at some point we're going to need to see age verification of online users so that children are offered a greater protection against harm, and so that we don't have people hiding behind anonymity to hurl all kinds of abuse and threats online that they would never be able to do in the real world. We need to bring to the real world and to the online world a culture of respect.
And how about you, Asha? What do you think are the kind of cost benefits of this idea of the ads allow us to have these services for free?
I think that, at least with my peers, we know that, and with some of the young people here at Youth Radio, we know that the ads aren't free to the extent of, like, they know where, even Facebook, to an extent, we have a conversation about, it's not free. Like, it's free to use, but you're paying with your information. Like, how do you, having conversations with young people about, how do you think Facebook makes money? And a lot of people, even young people, have come to me and asked in my, like, social media marketing role, Asha, how does Facebook, how does Twitter make money? Like, they're on the, you know, how does the company exist? And I think having those conversations is key. And I think that there needs to be some type of accountability around privacy settings and around terms of service agreements. There are so many times where even, like, a digital literate person who understands what's going on, I don't feel like reading through the whole service, you know, terms of service agreements. And that's why they're written that way. There have been efforts to try to make these more, like, clearly understood what you're agreeing to, but we're creating a culture of, like, I agree, I don't want to be bothered, versus trying to hold these companies accountable to say, you know, you actually need to write this in a way that I know. Like, how am I going to agree to something? Like, clicking a button that says I read it doesn't mean I read it.
And most of us haven't read it even when we click the button. And most of us have not read it even when we click that button.
And just the other day in preparation for this conversation, I went on my Facebook to see what my privacy settings were and how easy is it actually to change things. And if I wanted to say, like, I don't want to use this app on Facebook anymore. I don't want this advertiser to have my information anymore. You have to decline each one individually, and then another pop-up appears. And they make it this, like, laborious, like, labor-intensive, difficult process to even take your privacy back. And I just disagree with that. And I think that if that's on the governments, if that's accountability that we need to hold with other technology companies, you should be able to take your privacy back. You should be able to know it. You know, it's clearly stated what you're agreeing to. And I think it's important to have conversations with young people who are using these things. How do you think Instagram makes money? You know, how do you think their business? They're not just a free thing. They're not doing this for fun. These are companies. These are corporations. How do you think that this is happening?
And with Instagram, do they own those images once you post them?
Well,
does anybody, Jim? Yeah.
Yeah, you do, but they can use them under the terms of service. And so, I mean, Ash is exactly right. And as I said, this is a process. But what happened is, for the first 5 years of the extraordinary rapid development of social media platforms, which were sort of coterminous with cell phone, massive use of cell phones in this society, there were no rules. Government completely asleep at the switch. By the way, Rafi, it's really the Federal Trade Commission more than the Federal Communications Commission
okay.
in the U.S. that regulates this, and they do. They have the Children's On. They rewrote the regs for the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. But the truth is, this is exactly the discussion that has to happen. And truth, and you know, again, Commons is a large organization. We have these, and we do all of this, and we do it with parents and kids. We do it with, you know, hundreds of thousands of educators and millions of kids, and we do it with at the legislative level in D.C. and at the state level. And what you see, what you're starting to see is people are understanding what Asha said. But then you have to turn that into legislation, and it will be opposed by a number of large technology companies which spend, you know, millions and millions of dollars lobbying against any privacy laws. So that's really going to be the battle over the next few years. The other front that matters, which is not really our topic today, is that student privacy is also going to become an issue increasingly, because as technology is used hopefully appropriately in the classroom to revolutionize learning and 21st century education, there also is important privacy protection for student data that needs to be cared for. So this is we're on the tip of the iceberg. The problem is that we face is all the stuff that Asha and Rafi have mentioned. The industry wrote all the rules in order to monetize this for themselves and to make money. And the truth is, government did nothing, and the public didn't understand what was going on. So now you almost have to rewrite the laws or introduce new laws that restore the balance and put the public interest and the rights of kids and families and consumers first.
I agree.
Yeah.
Jim, wouldn't it be wonderful to have town halls all across the country about this very thing? Because as you correctly said, it's the monetizing of these services that, you know, is expressly the wrong business model for what is essentially service. And, you know, we have consumer protection laws. Why wouldn't we have them apply in a situation where, you know, young users of a service are unsafe and their privacy is being violated right, left, and center? So I think it's one thing for parents to educate themselves and have responsible conversations with their kids, as they must do, but they are telling us that they're finding it, you know, impossible to do it well, and they don't want their households to be 24/7 surveillance states.
And so, Rafi, I'm going to have you hold that. I'm going to have you hold that thought, Rafi, just because we're running up against a break. We're speaking about social media marketing to kids with Rafi Kavukian, James Steyer, who's CEO of Common Sense Media, Asha Richardson, who's co-founder of Youth Radio's Innovation Lab. You can join our conversation. I'll give out the number in a minute. I'm Holly Kern, and you're listening to Your Call.
I've got my hunches. It's the best, beats the rest. Cellular, modular, interactive, modular. Ring, 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 ring. Banana phone. Ping, pong, ping, pong, ping, pong, ping. Banana phone. It's no baloney. It ain't a phony. My cellular. Don't need dimes to call a friend of mine.
pizza. I'll call my cat. I'll call the White House. Have a chat.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about public housing. Elders in Richmond were found to be living in appalling conditions for years. So how do we ensure that our most vulnerable citizens get the services and protections that they need? Friday, of course, is our weekly media roundtable. We'll speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. Today, are kids and teens being exploited online? And what protections, consumer protections, should we put in place for advertisers who target young people on the internet? Millennials are now spending more time than ever on their digital devices, and 73% of American kids between 12 and 17 have Facebook accounts. We have a lot of callers. I want to get to them. 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number to join the conversation. And if you're a parent grappling with these issues or a teacher who's seeing this at play in your classroom, let us know what you think. 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Our guests are Rafi Kevorkian, who's a musician and an advocate for children. He's the author of Light Web, Dark Web, Three Reasons to Reform Social Media Before It Reforms Us. Asha Richardson is co-founder of Youth Radio's Innovation Lab, where young people develop web and mobile news apps. And Jim Steyer is the founder and CEO of Common Sense Media and the author of Talking Back to Facebook. So, Rafi, I'm so sorry. Right before the break, you were talking about the fact that parents don't want to do this all on their own. And frankly, we may not be equipped to do it on our own, given that a lot of our kids are more digitally savvy than we are. That's certainly my case with my 14-year-old. So go ahead and finish your thought.
And it seems to be an impossible task from what parents are saying. So the point that I make, and I also co-formed an organization called the Red Hood Project. People can go on redhoodproject.com and join in. It's a grassroots movement to demand accountability from the service providers themselves. And our position is that this is a consumer protection issue. The providers of these services have an obligation to offer a service that is safe for young users, and that's not the case right now. We feel that the onus is on them to provide a safe service.
Are there other countries that are doing a better job than we are at ensuring consumer protections?
You mean in terms of online safety and so on?
And privacy?
That's a very good question. I'll have to look into that. I'm not aware of that at the moment.
Jim might know. Jim?
Oh, yes. I do know. I would say that the U.S. is way behind Europe on this. There's a different attitude here. I mean, you know, common sense, again, we see this very much in the context some of the legislative work that we've done. The European community has a much greater sense of privacy rights and a much bigger focus on it. Most of the companies also didn't originate in Europe. They originated here in Silicon Valley.
Right.
And so, for example, they believe in the right to be forgotten. That's the term that's oftentimes used in Europe discussion. So they're much tougher privacy laws. And quite frankly, when we've done some of the big national work around this, that we have learned from the European models. And, you know, companies like Google and Facebook have had a lot more trouble in Europe than they've had with legislative and regulative bodies in the U.S. I mean, the one piece I would say to what on digital literacy and citizenship is, even though as a parent it can be really hard, I mean, this is an area where, again, there are 72,000 schools in the United States that are members of Common Sense, and we have given out to literally probably tens of millions of kids in the last couple of years digital literacy and citizenship curriculums. It takes time for those to sink in, if you will, because as Asha and Youth Radio folks know, you got to repeat the messages a lot. But you're starting to see this change. I think kids are way smarter now than they were a couple of years ago, and 2 years ahead of us, they'll be that much more smarter. So a lot of this is about repeating these messages, doing smart digital literacy and citizenship work, and having great work by people like Rafi and Asha.
And having these conversations.
Let's go to
Mike from Marin County. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Your Call. Do we have Mike, or are we having phone problems here? We do have Mike. Okay, it looks like we have phone problems. Asha, I know you were going to try and say something. I apologize. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I was just going to say, along those lines, it's kind of the battle of these tech companies are making things remarkably convenient and easy, and they're doing so much marketing and, like, social brand amplification and engagement that you mean, as a parent, you can try your hardest, but if your child has a smartphone and they want to make it Twitter, it's very difficult to police that or to monitor that, I would imagine. I mean, I'm not a parent, but I've definitely been a sneaky teenager on the computer when I should not have been, making email accounts when without permission and signing up for, you know, websites I didn't need to, you know what I mean?
So
I didn't
what,
have permission to be on.
What do you
so
think is an
the
effective...
thing that I think needs to happen is there needs to be some type of... maybe the guy, I don't know who would do this, there needs to be a marketing campaign that is just as effective as the tech company's campaigns to be like, you guys need to, you know, we can do one-on-ones and we can do groups and we can have these conversations at Youth Radio, but there needs to be some type of, like, awareness and shift, like you were mentioning earlier with the NSA leak coming out. Now kids are like, oh, privacy is a thing. I didn't know I wasn't. My things weren't private.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be some type of campaign and marketing that's just as effective as what we're trying to compete with. And I think, again, when you guys are talking about, like, the government is much slower than the tech companies, it's true. And the marketing campaigns from them sometimes are not as effective or cool or as appealing. And that's, like, we really need to make that, you know, combat it as well, like, legislatively, but also on the ground with the marketing and campaigns that are letting young people know.
With
the
public.
I can see what you're posting.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is, I Google search you. We have a activity that we do in one of our training programs where we have young people Google search themselves. Facebook search yourself. Don't log into Facebook, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
See how much of your information that you can find about yourself online. Like, I already know that you can find, you know, pictures of me and stuff, and I'm like, and the funny thing was my dad found a picture of me. It was an appropriate picture, but I was like, I didn't give that to you. How did you find that? And he said, I Googled you. And
well, that's a great...
dad. I don't know what marketing companies...
That's a great exercise to do with young people to help raise that kind of awareness. Let's go to some of our callers now. We're going to try again with Mike from Marin County. Welcome to your call.
Hi, thank you so much. I work with Alcohol Justice in Marin County, and we, you know, focus on alcohol policy, and we focus on restrictions on ads and other types of content that has just proliferated incredibly on social media. And we put out a report 5 years ago, a peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Global Drug Policy and Practice, which looked just at Facebook and found some startling things 5 years ago. It's only gotten worse. We know the industry tries to normalize and encourage consumption of alcohol by portraying products and people drinking them in a really fun, cool, exciting manner. And it's exploitation, and it's particularly effective online because of the degree of interactiveness and peer pressure that we know is associated with social media. And we see campaigns done by numerous companies where their advertising and alcohol content appears nowhere else but online, and it's having a very negative effect on youth behaviors. They engage in dangerous drinking behavior, which leads, of course, to all kinds of problems. You know, there's problems with brain development. There's problems with suicide, depression, and sexual violence and unprotected sex. And all of this is portrayed online as something cool and fashionable and hip.
So the marketing of alcohol, Mike brings up the marketing of alcohol to children. I read in a Youth Uprising newsletter a couple of weeks ago that they were also marketing guns to young people on Facebook. What kind of marketing concerns you the most, Jim?
Are you asking me on that?
Yeah.
I think all of the above. I think that's a good comment from our listener, but I think all of the above, because there are specific issues like alcohol or guns. And by the way, Facebook tried to be responsive on that, in that case. But I think it's the constant barrage of commercial messages, which I think can be very damaging just in the over-commercialization of childhood, which I think can also be damaging on specific issues. I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about, which is related to this, is that young people today oftentimes play out their identities and form their identities on social media. I mean, this adolescence and late tween age, you know, between maybe 11 and 15, is a critical time of identity formation. And so when you're constantly being marketed to with weight loss ideas and body image messages for girls as well as boys and some other stuff, it goes beyond just alcohol and guns and other things that we know are bad for kids and unsafe, as Rafi mentioned earlier. But it goes to the kind of self-image and identity that kids form. So all of this marketing is concerning. The truth is we can, and I believe over the next few years we can and will put in certain kinds of limits. But you're going to have to move to a system which is currently opt-out. The way it works today is, because the industry wrote all the rules, is you get it unless you opt out. Well, the system should be you don't get it unless you opt in and you agree to the bargain. And that's the fundamental shift that should happen. The second would be if you started to compensate people or the industry required to compensate people for the use of their personal information. But the mere shift from an opt-out to an opt-in standard would revolutionize this discussion. And I'm optimistic that over the next few years that can happen, although you'll see hundreds of millions of dollars spent by the tech industry to lobby against such a shift.
And that's Jim Steyer. He's founder and CEO of Common Sense Media. We'll have a link to that information at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Asha Richardson, who's co-founder of Youth Radio's Innovation Lab over in Oakland, and Rafi Kavikian, who's a musician and the author of Light Web, Dark Web, Three Reasons to Reform Social Media Before It Reforms Us. And you can join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And if you're in marketing or advertising businesses and your target audience is kids or teens, how do you approach that work? Do you think of minors as more vulnerable to manipulation through advertising, as more savvy? What are your thoughts? 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. We're going to go to Jim in San Francisco. Welcome to your call, Jim.
Hi there. I'm a psychologist and the author of Raising Generation Tech, Prepare Your Children for a Media Fuel World, plus the father of an 8 and 6-year-old. And great conversation. Brief comments. One, there are three levels of intervention here. One is government legislation, which I think is going to be, as Jim suggests, an extremely heavy lift, not only because there's a lot of money against it, legislation, but also it's going to become a political football of libertarianism and so on. A second level where I think Common Sense Media does brilliant work is in reaching students through schools. But I think fundamentally, however hard it is, it's up to the families and the parents to provide the limits, provide education for the kids, because they're the ones who can send those messages constantly. I really think that despite the fact that digital immigrants that we are as parents, it's a challenge. Parents need to step up and provide that immediate point of education, of intervention, of feedback and guidance, so kids can become responsible users of technology, which is, as you said, we are not going back, and it's so much of what we're doing now is looking in the rearview mirror, looking at the implications of the tech revolution on child development, and a lot of great things about it, but also some real troubling things in terms of relationships, self-identity, personality development, et cetera.
And Jim, what's one idea that you have that you would give to parents for setting these limits?
Well, just be deliberate. Don't just go with the flow. Everybody else has an iPhone, so we'll give our kid an iPhone. So many parents are signing their kids up before age 13, which is illegal for Facebook. But to make deliberate choices based upon the values, what kind of a relationship they want to have with technology, really, because the relationship that parents have with technology, it often becomes the relationship that kids have. So handing a kid an iPhone when they're bored in a restaurant, when they get cranky, this for me is a form of self-medication that parents are using these days. So it's a much broader issue, but I think the key point that I want to emphasize is that these days, kids' development of their self-identity, it's no longer really self-identity so much as manufactured identity, because self-promotion, impression management are so important these days in general with kids' development. But it's now coming from the outside as kids are creating personas of themselves on Facebook, on Twitter, et cetera, instead of really understanding who they are as people.
Well, thank you so much for that, Jim. We appreciate it. And Rafi, I know that you've said that it can't just be up to parents. What would you add to Jim?
The caller makes some very good points, and I appreciate that very much. I think every family needs a social media policy. that is understood and respected by the kids and the family. In fact, they should be part of drawing it up, but the parents should take the lead. And, of course, the social media rules can be anything from no devices at the dinner table to no devices in the bedroom past a certain hour, because we do know that a lot of young people are sleeping with their smartphones, and this is resulting in sleep loss for them, which is now becoming quite a large problem. So every family has the opportunity and should take the opportunity to have its own social media rules clearly outlined, and something that you can, you know, paste up on a wall, bulletin board, or on your fridge, and that kids respect it.
Great, great idea. And Asha, I want to get to a lot more callers since we've got so many people who want to talk to you all, but what piece of advice would you have for parents?
I think that you need to have a honest conversation, because you can have rules, but your kids are going to break those rules. As a kid who slept with her cell phone, I got my first cell phone at 11, and that was some time ago. That was about 11 years ago. And who suffered staying, like, having to go to class but being on the computer late at night. Like, your kids are going to break those rules, and you need to be, like, consistent about them. But also, I think there needs to be talked about this, like, social identity that was brought up by our caller, mm-hmm. that their friends are going to say, why don't you have a Facebook? Why don't you have an Instagram? So there's a limit to what parents can do, and there also should be the reinforcement from the parents so the child has something positive that they can say. Well, I'm too busy doing, you know, ballet or soccer or studying to worry about that. Because your child's not only, you know, targeted by the marketing, but the marketing, word-of-mouth marketing and brand engagement, that the peer pressure, it's what's going to make the difference if you don't prepare your child before they get that comment about why they do or they don't. I just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Steve in Salinas. Welcome to your call, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, thank you for having me on. The issue I'm calling about is the privacy issue, especially with Facebook. And before Eric Snowden came out, I already realized it happened, because 3 days before the earthquake hit off the coast of Japan, I had a vision, and I come from a long line of Christians and all that, so I was really a non-believer, the black sheep of the family. So here I'm awoken by this voice and transported outside to witness three tornadoes and all these balloons, and they go silent after the first tornado hits. So I post all this on Facebook, you know, because it really freaked me, and I have a lot of family back in Texas who are Christians. So I warn them. I tell them, hey, you know, something big is going to happen. I don't know where or when, and, you know, 3 days later, it hit. Several weeks later, I went back to revisit that post because mine didn't see it. So I said, well, let me repost it. It's gone. I had put it in private messages to a bunch of people also.
Hey, Steve, we're running a little low on time, so could you get to the point? Do you have a question?
My point with privacy is that this isn't going to go away until everyone who has a social media start speaking up. Use it like in war. Use it against your enemy. Me, I post against Facebook or the government. That's the only way, you know, to prove that your privacy is gone. You have to enrage the people to fight back.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. Let's go to Joey in Marin County. Hi, Joey.
Hi there. I'm a nanny in Marin. I'm also a mother. And I was saying the exact same thing about I think that the only way to regulate the use of technology is to take it away at a certain point, because the kids are going to say, I'm not using it, I'm not la la la. So at dinner time, have dinner together, everybody talks, what did you do today? They're going to hate it in the beginning, because a lot of times everyone's on their phone while everybody's having dinner in a different room, which I think is pretty unhealthy. And also, a lot of times the kids will say, well, the other mom lets us do this, and the other parent, this is what people are doing. It does not matter. You do what you need to do for your kids. And nobody's actually talked about the fact that kids are getting, like, brain tumors and all kinds of effects of this technology when they're young, because their brains are still developing, and you haven't even touched on that. They shouldn't have the phones, shouldn't sleep with the phone, shouldn't be near the phone. when they're too young.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that, Joey. We actually did a full week looking at the effects of radiation on people. We got an email from Peter in El Cerrito, which I'll read in just a second. But so Joey is saying the best way to regulate tech is to turn it off. Any responses to that?
Yeah,
Asha.
Can I add to that? Actually, we had a young person talk about how she said, she's a teenager, I think her name is Sophie. She was talking about actually how parents need to model that behavior, and was talking about how she sees her father addicted to the cell phone. And she sees her father talking and texting on the phone at the dinner table. So I think that it's important to have those rules, but also for the parents to take accountability and also follow those rules. I grew up with my mom having one of the first Bluetooth headsets, and one time I definitely thought she was talking to me. She was on Bluetooth. So I think that if you do set these rules that there's no phones at the dinner table, then their phone, you need to model that behavior as well. If you're not going to have it, and you're, you know what I mean, because that's what the young people, that's what kids see.
Mm-hmm. That's
they're
really
emulating
great.
This phone behavior because they're trying to have this adult identity. This I'm grown, you know what I mean, I can do what you do. They shouldn't. You can say you don't have the same rules as your parents because you're a kid, but you can also really, that makes a difference if that's, they see you not doing that.
That's a really important point. Peter in El Cerrito emails us. He says, I'm sure your guests have mentioned that there are several free plugins which install in web browsers such as Chrome or Firefox or Safari in seconds, such as Facebook Blocker, Do Not Track, and AdBlock. A jailbroken iPhone can also easily have these blocks installed. They automatically prevent many forms of data mining from social media, which is used in marketing. I recommend them highly. That's from Peter in El Cerrito. Thank you for that, Peter. So we just have a couple minutes left in the program. You just brought up sort of rules, and then there's the public sphere of regulation. I'm wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about regulation that you think might be coming down the pipe, Jim, or regulation you'd like to see?
Well, I think fundamentally, as I said earlier, I think the fundamental thing is that there should be legislation at both national and state levels turning everything to an opt-in standard. That would have an enormous impact on all the discussions for happening. I think
and
second...
Is Common Sense Media leading that charge? Can people who are listening...
We certainly are. Just go to commonsense.org and you can see a lot about the policy discussions. Quite frankly...
And we'll link
to
all of that.
Yeah. Just go to commonsense.org. You can also find all the digital literacy stuff we're talking about there, too. But the thing I would say is, I think this is going to take place over the next 2 to 3 years because you're going to see major opposition from certain sectors of the tech industry, including the companies that keep kind of coming up in this discussion, Facebook, Instagram, probably Google, and because the money involved is enormous. But I do think that is where we're headed, and from a regulatory standpoint, the ball game is really at the Federal Trade Commission. Now, they rewrote the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act regulations at the end of 2012. That was a significant step forward. But that's where the regulatory piece would come in, along with, quite frankly, attorneys general. So Kamala Harris, for example, the attorney general of the state of California, is quite good on issues like cyberbullying and other tech-related stuff. But that's the change that will happen. But I agree with the callers as well as the two extremely distinguished guests you had me on with it. This is going to have to be a groundswell of consumer awareness and calling for change. And I think that will happen over the next 2 to 3 years. I think we are redefining, finally, what all this means, and finally reminding ourselves that privacy and child development and the social, emotional, cognitive development of our kids is critical.
And, Rafi,
and I hope that we'll see legislation that addresses that.
And Rafi, just final thoughts on this idea of where we're going to go in the next 2 years, where you'd like us
to
go.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed this hour, and I really appreciate Jim's comments and Asha's thoughts as well, very, very much. My sister is the privacy commissioner for the province of Ontario, and she designed something called Privacy by Design. She created that idea. It's become the gold standard internationally for privacy work. So I'll finish by saying that in my book, Light Web, Dark Web, I talk about privacy by design and how it should be the thought when we're trying to redo the privacy relationship with social media. Privacy should not be an afterthought. The opt-in, I think, is an excellent idea from Jim. We also need safety by design. The safety of young users should not be an afterthought. It shouldn't be left to chance. So privacy by design, safety by design, conscious use of social media. That's what we're all after for a culture of respect.
And let me give Asha the last word. You design new apps there at the Youth Radio Innovation Lab. Do you think that we will see young people leading this charge for privacy and consumer protections?
I think that young people are now, like previously mentioned, because of the huge controversy around NSA and security and phone tapping, it's something that they're hearing regularly, and it's something that is going to become something that they grow up being aware of in a way another generation probably hasn't dealt with on such a regular, consistent basis. And I think that with all of the efforts that my fellow guests are talking about, we'll definitely be able to make that shift to the future. It's something that more and more teenagers, and then hopefully that will like tread down from college-age students to high school-age students, hopefully having these conversations with middle school and elementary school students about what does it mean to, you know, have privacy, what does it mean to, you know, share your information. I think it's key and it's important and it's happening.
And it is happening, and it's been encouraging to hear all of the work that all of you are doing. Thank you for joining us for this hour. Asha Richardson is co-founder of Youth Radio's Innovation Lab. We were also joined by Rafi Kevorkian, who's a founder of the Center for Child Honoring, author of Light Web, Dark Web, Three Reasons to Reform Social Media Before It Reforms Us, and Jim Steyer, who's founder and CEO of Common Sense Media. We're going to put a link to that at yourcallradio.org. He's also the author of Talking Back to Facebook and The Other Parent, The Inside Story of the Media's Effect on Our Children. Again, we'll put resources at our website, yourcallradio.org. You can also post more comments and resources there. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Thanks for your calls and emails. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. What are the best ways to fix public housing? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the series Subsidized Squalor, about appalling conditions in a Richmond public housing complex. The writer says some of the poorest, oldest, and most vulnerable people in the Bay Area live in public housing, where vermin and crime are known problems. But residents say their pleas for help are ignored. How did it get this way? What should our standards for public housing be? And how should they be enforced? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.